Any question you ask? Okay.
My question is, so the logic way to use the method when they just teach what we do not want and what we want ultimately, I thought usually, like for me, my incentive thinking at the beginning is what I want, and then I can rational to think what do I want ultimately, and then I find out what I do not want if I think about the ultimate goals. Is that the way to?
Yeah, can also. Sometimes it doesn't matter which comes first. As long as we cover enough, you know, it helps. Sometimes people don't come to Dharma world thinking about this and that. Sometimes people may start from here, people start from there. Sometimes they start from something sweet, sometimes they start from something bitter. You know? It can be. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
But it is good to cover both. You know, to be clear about what you don't want and what you want.
Okay. The second question I ask, I'm not sure whether it's direct related. I just try to use the Four Noble Truths, the cause effect, to solve the problem I'm facing these several days. Not say problems, but weakness. So, but I have some questions here. So, for example, the weakness I will try to overcome is when doing serving volunteer work, I hope I can be more consider the whole environment, but not what I want to do, and then I do. So this is the problem, and then the causes is maybe grow up in a single children family, I was being the focus, so I didn't consider the environment and other people that much, and not have selflessness sense. And then come to the goal is to overcome this, and then the way to achieve it is, for example, maybe need to remind myself more when I do Dharma work. Is this the way to apply like this?
Well, this is there's no yes, you always need to remind yourself and to be selfless and to consider others also. You know, sometimes, but sometimes we see things as overall. Sometimes certain things, I don't believe there's something that you always have to sacrifice your own welfare just for others. I don't think there's such thing. And very often it is not conflicting. While we satisfy and we strive for our own welfare, we can also make it help for others also. So it's not always conflicting between ourselves and other people. You know, that's what we are trying to do in the spiritual community. You know, instead of saying that if you want to achieve this, somebody must sacrifice. No, it's not necessary like that. For example, in this community, if we sacrifice all the community's welfare, it can be worse for this organization. Eventually, nobody there to be committee. You know, it can happen like that. But if the committee can practice well, and then it becomes an inspiring factor for other people to come in. Sometimes when we don't milk dry our people, so because they can grow, when they grow, other people see, they feel inspired. So they come in, then we got more manpower. Sometimes we want everyone to sacrifice. By the time everyone sacrifice and no one benefit from the Dhamma, then people will look at it, wow, it's so horrible. Being a committee of a Dharma world, they end up become worse. Their life become worse. They don't have their private life. They cannot take care of their own benefits. Then what is the point? I better don't be a committee. You see or not? But if you have a balanced committee life, You know, if you have a balanced community life, then it's very different. Because of the balance, then it inspires. So that's why we always must care for the first beneficiary, the third beneficiary, second beneficiary, and third beneficiaries. So when they do it well, even the first beneficiary will be uplifted. They will find meaning in joining. They will find inspired by their leaders. If the leaders are too exhausted, they serve everybody, just like what our friends in the Mahayana, they always say, oh, we want to help other people at our sacrifice. Yes, you can sacrifice your life for others, depends. But if you sacrifice your spiritual benefits, then you are down. Your mind is so defiled, while other people purify. Then how are you going to lead? See or not? You cannot inspire. So that's why it is also important the first, the second, the third beneficiaries, the second beneficiaries, they always protect their welfare in the sense that they must be a good vessel for Dhamma, the carrier for Dhamma. If they fail to fulfill this duty, so by the time they sacrifice everything for others, but without fulfilling this responsibility of being a good carrier, good vessel for Dhamma, then the whole propagation become upside down. You see or not? So I don't think you have to give a, if you want to give a very concrete answer, then I may advise you. If you give me, you ask me from a point of principle, then I give you principle. But if you ask about specific thing, then maybe we can see in clearer light and context. So not always conflicting. Sometimes apparently we see, oh, these teachers go to meditate. The other teacher go to meditate. Oh, they are not happy. How well if they come and serve and they don't meditate? But not true. When they bring up their to higher level of their mind, the higher spiritual attainment, it will be a great service to the sasana, to the Buddha's dispensation. So the whole idea in our Dhamma leadership community, nobody stop anywhere. All must grow, keep growing. Teachers must progress. Servers must progress. Everybody must progress. So then can it be an inspiring community. That we ourselves feel inspired by ourselves, by our close companion. If we are not inspiring ourselves, we are not inspiring, how can we inspire others? That's why we must go to practice. Teachers must go to practice. Everybody must go to practice. So it seems that we are doing it at the expense of Dhamma propagation. But it's not true. In the long run, when the whole pyramid remains intact and rise up, the base will rise. When we have more and more people practice well and we protect their practice, eventually people who practice well, they naturally will have a gratitude to pay back to sasana, to serve. They will not only, most people, if they are real true beneficiaries of the Dhamma, we will always try to help others. We will not end up as the last person in the Buddha's dispensation. This is not possible. If it is not the real beneficiary, we don't want to say. If it is a real beneficiary of the Dhamma, naturally, when you have a higher Dhamma experience, the sense of gratitude naturally arises. So that's why I if someone behaves in a very ungrateful way, usually I have doubt. I reserve towards their achievement. I feel reserved. Everyone has some kind of a gratitude. But how they manifest that gratitude is different. But it is impossible for a high level of Dhamma practitioner to be an ingrate. It's not possible. They will be grateful. So when they are grateful, how can the Dhamma not help? It will be helpful. Occasionally, there may be people who practice until they die and they have no chance to manifest that gratitude in human world. But they may manifest that gratitude in Deva world. So in total, overall, if everyone practice, everyone grow, teachers grow, students grow, everyone grow, then the total benefit is best for the Buddha Sasana. This is very sure. Okay? So I don't think there's a conflict. I don't think someone must sacrifice your own personal dream for the sake of other people's dream. No, I don't think so. I think it is possible when we work together, we share a common dream, while we fulfill the organization's dream, our own dream also can be fulfilled. Maybe not within a limited time frame, not in a short while, but overall in the long run, it will be like that. When everyone optimize his or her life, then the total Buddha's dispensation will last long. Okay, that's why in the Dhammapada, the Buddha say, never should you sacrifice your own welfare for other people's welfare. No. It means a substantial welfare, not in the sense that, oh, now the hijacker want to kill, choose one to whom want to kill, and he offer your life to be killed. Okay, that's okay. In fact, that is also taking care of your welfare. That's a paramatta parami. If you can do that, then when the hijacker want to kill another, say, no, don't kill, kill me. And they save that person. You are also benefiting your life. Because you are cultivating high parami, paramatta parami, ultimate parami. But never the Buddha advises to sacrifice and let our mind go down. No. I don't think we need to sacrifice our spiritual welfare for other people's spiritual welfare. I don't think so. You must see things, conditions as a whole, not as a one by one. Now you sacrifice. So this person, this kuti got built, this monastery was built. No, you don't think like that. You see it as a whole. Every empowerment of our new courses will only contribute for the betterment of a Buddha's dispensation. How it works, nature will work. You know? Buddha's dispensation, Buddha sasana, forefather chuancheng. Buddha's dispensation. English, we say dispensation to translate the word sasana.
I have a question regarding Bande's talk yesterday regarding the Vinaya part. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday when when Bande asked why, what's the purpose of Vinaya? And at that time, my instant answer is, oh, it can help the way to Nibbana. And then Bande said it's indirect way. So I have a question. So Buddha, he focused on Nibbana, of course, everyone's. So to have Vinaya, it's very important. Is this because, as Bande mentioned, it's a conventional way to help more people or the future people can get Nibbana because it can protect the Sangha? Is that the main reason?
Okay, so Vinaya has a lot to do with human management also. It protects the Sangha, protects the... Vinaya is something like a fence. You know, you don't live with a fence, you live under the protection of the house. But if you don't have a fence, then sometimes wild animals come in, bad things come in. So Vinaya is something like a fence, a protection like that. When during the early time of the Buddha's dispensation, even the most backward disciple of the Buddha was Sotapan, first stage of sainthood. So when Venerable Sariputta requests the Buddha to lay down Vinaya, to propound Vinaya, then the Buddha refused, because thinking that now everyone can guard themselves, everyone can take care of themselves, everyone is well conduct, have good conduct. So why do I need to give them, impose rules on them? It's not necessary. So the Buddha wait for the occasion to arise, you know, to lay down the Vinaya. Of course, there's the leadership wisdom also. You know, if there's no issues, you start to do too many preventive things, sometimes people get fed up with the prevention. You know, the preventive measures, people get fed up. So only when some incident happens, then you lay down the rule, people appreciate the rule and be thankful to the rule and willingly observe and abide by the rule. So this is also another reason. Only in exceptional situation, the Buddha would take preventive measures. Usually the Buddha will allow certain things to happen first. After the happening, then the Buddha gave the Vinaya and the Vinaya became well received. So this is like a fence. You know, Dhamma... So before the fence was established, when all the practitioner was strong, so just Dhamma alone is sufficient for attainment of Nibbana. So in this way, so directly is the Dhamma that enable you to reach, to realize Nibbana. But Vinaya is the one that protect the whole system, protect the Sangha, protect the preserve the Dhamma and things like that. You know, so it's like the fence.
So it just depends on different situation. Because I think it's also kind of, as Ben mentioned, it's management of the organization too. So Buddha's, I mean, there's no, I mean, how do you say, to have the fence is the same as important of individual Nibbana, something like that.
I mean,
to have the fence, to have the Vinaya, is the same important to protect the system. No, is same important as individual Nibbana.
It's a bit different because there's no comparison. How to compare? You know, fence is fence. You know, individual, of course, it is important. But without the system, if the system collapses, you know, then individual also find it very difficult to practice. You know, that's the thing. When the Sangha fall down, collapse, you know, bad things are happening, people lost their faith, then many people will not come to the Dhamma event, you know. So that's the reason. But how to compare is different things, you know. You cannot compare the different things.
Yeah, I understand it's different things.
You cannot say this is, you know, whether my eye is more important or my brain is more important, you know, or my mind is more important. Without the mind, you can't see. Without eye also, you can't see. Something like that, you know. They are not exactly in the same. You cannot say without. It's difficult to compare importance in this way.
Yeah.
The different nature.
Yeah, I know. But what I mean is because
and like, not necessary to compare.
Yeah, but sometimes have the choice. For example, the as Bandai mentioned, the student, I forgot his name, but when he on the stage maybe realized Nibbana on the just a Sangha center. And then because he and then his master called him and then he think at that point he fulfill his Vinaya rather than realize Nibbana. So it's just a kind of personal choose.
Choice. You're thinking about that. That one is a bit slightly different, you know. For him he's not in a hurry anymore. He's an anagami. You know, once you become an anagami, he could easily attain Arahantship sometime later. So that's why he decided not to break his Vinaya. When the senior called him, he would attend to his senior. Then after that, coming back, other time he chose the other. He's not really like forsaking his personal welfare. Nothing to the welfare. Anagami, how can you say anagami forsake his personal welfare? You're already anagami, very safe already. Understand? So a bit different, you see. It's a bit different.
I just want to follow up with the Vinyana question, okay? And I know Buddha's teaching is not just Vinyana, it's
Vinaya.
Vinaya, okay, the most of important other part. But because this area is Panyaloka has more question, okay? So when I listen to Bhante, you may explain it and what's the purpose for Vinyana, I have a question. Vinaya, I'm sorry, Vinaya. My question is that pretty much like in Chinese, Lujia, so set up a rule for the society and the order for the, at that time and a house for the family and for the country, and even though not just Confucius, that time, and later on, they also have a quote-unquote 弟子规, you know. It's pretty much this, similar like or they have something different, you know, meaning or Buddha see something differently or pretty much similar. That's the question I would like to ask.
When the philosophers propound certain ideas for morality, They propound it based on their thinking or based on their consideration of real life necessity. you know, order for the society, societal order. But the Buddha was different. When the Buddha taught morality, the Buddha taught it as the base of seven purification, the first purification, linking to the rest of the purifications. The highest purification is knowledge and vision, and for liberation. So the Buddha's purpose was very, very clear. All these are meant for final aim, liberation. But for the philosophers, they could propound these ideas of morality for the morality's sake, per se, or for the good governance in the country, or for the good society atmosphere or organizing, the organization, the operation of a society. So only like that, more for worldly achievement. But the Buddha seems to be this is a very basic or superficial, but the Buddha had in view a very profound aim for morality, for Vinaya, for these observances. The Buddha had a very profound, it's like building the foundation for the next to come, purification of mind, for purification of view, purification of overcoming doubt, purification of the knowledge of the path of and non-path, and purification of the path and towards the knowledge and vision, and knowledge and vision, something like that. So seven purification. So it's different. Secondly, when the Buddha propounded about Vinaya, it has in view the natural laws of cause and effect particularly. Whereas for Confucius, when he propounds, he says, oh, you have to obey your father, mother. Okay, that's good. But you have to be completely loyal to your leaders, to the king. It's more like for governance. But he didn't say what happened if the king abused his power. What if the king didn't do his job to take care of the welfare of the people? So that becomes defective. You see? That kind of teaching is good in some ways, but they have their limitation. Whereas when the Buddha teach about morality, the Buddha taught it in such a way that this is all guided and facilitate the journey towards liberation, towards a final goal. So it is more, I would say, more solid. And then when the Buddha talk about good for the good cause for the good result, bad cause for the bad result, it's all based on natural law. It is no such thing as that it can be wrong. You know, you never say that you can, if the king abuse, if the king is bad or wrong, then you still need to blindly follow. The Buddha didn't say like that. So this is the limitation I find that we get the morality given by the philosophers, the thinkers. But for the Buddha, it's not about thinkers. He directly saw with his insight that if this is done, what is the effect in future to the individual, to the group, and to the final, their journey towards the final liberation? He directly knew it. And he knew he had the 10 purposes in mind, which the philosophers didn't have. They may have one purpose in mind, two purposes in mind, but not all the 10 purposes in mind, which the Buddha had. The Buddha had 10 purposes in mind when he propounded the Vinaya. So that's a big difference. It's so, so vast difference.
Yeah, continue the Vinaya. Just one, okay. Very quick. So I'm just curious, for Buddha's teaching, the three areas, Jie Ding Hui, okay, if the person goes through the deeper for the concentration and wisdom, that means that the person will automatically will fit the jie de zhege li mian, the scope. Or doesn't matter how ding hui, how deep they practice, they still have a problem for the jie, this area.
You see, the sila training is a foundation for samadhi and panya. So it will be very strange to say that a person can just bypass the sila and fulfill the samadhi and panya and expect the sila to be fulfilled. No. But of course we know the higher sila, higher virtues, can only be perfected when we also perfect our concentration and wisdom. But the basic one is like a cycle. It's like the tree. Are we going to have a big tree in order to have a deep root? No. The tree grow in such a way that, you know, the root take place and then they grow the trunk and then the leaves also coming out. You know. Then after that, because of the process, and then everything will grow as a whole. So similarly, we cannot say this process, if this is, yes, no doubt, if the wisdom is complete, like the Pachika Buddha, you know, sometime because of the trigger, because of his past parami, it is possible that the Pachika Buddha, it was given in the story that it was a hunter. Then, for some reason, the hunter got a trigger by the Bodhisattva. Then the hunter, suddenly no more a hunter, just let go of his hunting and reflect on the Dhamma. Because of the past parami, the samatha vipassana training, the sila samadhi panya accumulated long ago. So these things suddenly surfaced and ripened, and he became a Pachika Buddha. So once he became a Pachika Buddha, samadhi and panya is complete. So the virtues also naturally become complete. So it is possible in that sense, then when you complete your samadhi and panya, your virtues naturally complete. This is no doubt about it. But ordinary people who take a gradual training, there's no way you want to bypass the sasila and go into samadhi and panya. Of course, the hunter didn't have much sila. Hunter, he was killing. Even the first precept he didn't fulfill. But because of his past barami, suddenly all his potential jump up within the split of second, a short while. Then here he became Pachika Buddha. These are the cases for people with all the parami so fulfilled, so complete, and waiting to be ripened only. This is a very unique case, Pachika Buddha and some exceptional disciples of the Buddha. But most people is gradual training. So gradual training, there's no way you can bypass the sila. For those, the parami ripened is different.
The question is only based on the, Bhante, you just described in the earlier, when people ask Buddha want to set up rule for the monk, and he say no need because everybody, so the question is based on that, because at that time, assume at that time, people already practice very deep, you know, for the concentration and wisdom. So that's the reason Buddha say that. No, that question just based on that.
It's very clear. That one is for people whose sila already fulfilled, naturally. You see, sila doesn't mean that you need to have someone impose on you, you don't kill, you don't steal, then only you have sila. There are people born with. I have a friend in Sri Lanka. No, their son, by birth, before any teaching by the parents, no killing, five precepts complete, not even want to eat meat. Natural vegetarian by birth. So such people. So during the Buddha's life, there are plenty such people. They have been without any sila teaching. They already have the sila naturally. Because the heart is good, mind is good, nature is good. Yes, you still find such people in Himalaya. Some places in Himalaya, I don't think they get these five precepts and more teaching or whatever. But they have that. They live in that. So such people, when they get the Dhamma and concentration and wisdom practice, they just jump up. For example, the first five ascetics, you know, the first five bhikkhus, you see the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta? The Buddha didn't talk about sila. The Buddha didn't talk much about samadhi. The Buddha straight away go to the Four Noble Truths, the wisdom training. Because why? Their mind was so pure at that time. To the point that they could even think the Bodhisattva was wrong, not pursuing, you You know, taking food also is not, you are giving up your training. You are relaxing in your training. You can imagine, their mind was thinking so highly. The mind is only on the Dhamma and Dhamma and Dhamma and nothing else. So such people, their sila is perfect. Even without the teacher telling, oh, now you should not kill. Naturally, they just won't kill. Okay? So that is not going to say that sila can be bypassed. It's just saying that some people no need to be taught. They already have the sila. Okay?
When we're doing Dhamma work, how to really create the accumulate wholesome karma? Because like yesterday when they mentioned, the deva, he just want to test the two bhikkhus. Actually, his intention is not to split them. And so as we have different kind of values, and when we work together,
But the intention was bad enough. The deva, the intention was bad enough. He's saying, I want to split them, see whether I can split them. So even not with this idea that I want to split them permanently, but that is bad enough. Because the object is sangha. Yes.
Then, for example, causes and effects. So when we sometimes do Dhamma work and 不小心 unintentionally and we hold on our own value, sometimes cause inharmony in the society, in the group. So disharmony. So how to avoid that kind of thing? So because we want horse and karma, right? We are doing good things.
Okay. Attentively learn your Dhamma leadership. Yes, that's what I'm doing for you all. So that everyone will undertake the duty with competence. Qualify. You really are able to carry out your duty. That's what we are trying to do. That's why in Tusita, if you are not given, you are not authorized, you are not supposed to guide others. If a yogi come into the meditation center, and then a yogi trying to guide another yogi, we are going to give them strict warning, and if you insist on that, we have to send you out. Because in order to guide others, you must be trained, and we must be sure that you are competent to do it, and you are qualified to guide others. So even to give counseling, not everyone can be allowed to give counseling in our monastery. You are not allowed to give counseling unless you are authorized. Unless we trust you, when you listen, you don't accumulate more unwholesome things, and you are able to respond and guide people in the right way. But very often we find the blind guiding the blind. So when two persons, this person A bears some trouble, psychological problem or whatever, emotional problem. B also has some emotional problem. Then they need each other, they feel they want to talk. So A throw the problem to B, B throw the problem to A. End up, A has two problems, A and B. B also has two problems, A and B. So this is a way that we don't want to happen. So if you are not qualified, you don't. But for the teacher or those who are very mature in the training, we allow them to do the counseling. Because people who are mature in the training, okay, no problem, you throw your rubbish to me. I just don't care. You know, I hear attentively, listen, but I don't suffer the pressure. I can proceed with my work normally. So such a people can guide others. So in the same way, you need to be trained to be competent to execute your duty. That is why we want those who don't attend Dhamma leadership course, we don't let them be the core group. In China, I told them, four qualifications all Dhamma servers must fulfill. First, you must commit yourself to observe five precepts for life. Not only now, for life. Secondly, you must keep 8 precepts weekly. In the ancient time, every Uposatha day. But nowadays, because the Uposatha is difficult to, you know, our modern calendar way is different. So we make sure they observe one day every week. So at least in a year, at least 52 times, you must observe 8 precepts. So that you have the higher morality. Okay? Then the third one, all core members, Dhamma servers, must have gone through Dharma leadership course. At least a few times. At least a few times, not one time. And then, fourth, you must be a beneficiary of the Dharma or a beneficiary of the community that you try to build or the organization you try to serve. You must be the beneficiary. So come to meditate at least every year, 7 days, at least 7 days, minimum requirement. So these four requirements, 5 precepts, 8 precepts, Dharma leadership course and meditation. We want them to have that. So because we find that once you have these four qualifications, a lot of management problem, leadership problem, become overcome by naturally. Because people are qualified to do the work they do. They want to do. So the problem is that before you qualify and you undertake, there's a difficulty. So we try to minimize. And if you can minimize that, it's very meritorious to provide conditions for other people to perform merits. What we are doing in leadership is we are creating opportunity for other people to do good. Because of our organizing work, all good things happen. And this is great. This is very great. We perform, that's why it's important that we perform, we serve the Dharma in good mind, with wisdom. Not only unintentional. You cannot say unintentional. It's not enough. You close your eyes, you drive the car, you get drunk, you drive the car, you don't have intention to kill. But you end up everything in a mess. That is also no good. Negligence is also bad karma. It's important to exercise things with good discretion. Good prudence. Okay?
I thought Pandey 4 days ago said maybe this time you are at something about 意识心性.
And that comes under the actually tradition and culture. For example, certain things, mannerism, certain procedure in the Vinaya, Sangha way, and that we have to honor the elders, things are like that. Why even when we walk, we give way to elders. If we see the elders are somewhere nearby, we always give way. These are what we call that the Isa Sing Tai. That means that you perform externally. For example, externally you show your respect, these are things. It has some uniting force. You know? And the set giving through minor things like that, we cultivate the sense of priority, giving priority to elders, things like that. So when we serve our teachers, serve elders, it has a kind of a making the mind soft in front of the teacher who can give us Dhamma. So these are the things, you know. Why is it necessary to bow? Why always a junior bowing to the elders? You know. Why give way? Why the service to teacher and for the teacher to take care of the students also? There's a lot more in the Vinaya. It is given and everything has a reason. And it serves good purposes. I don't know. So, it is. For example, I just want to show when you talk about this kind of mannerism and kind of we protect certain kind of form, you know. In fact, Nibbana is about the mind, but we take care of certain form to serve certain purpose. One example I can talk to you all about this topic is take our chanting book. I show you. Take our chanting book. Okay? Open up to page 22. This is what we do every morning. Rejoice in merit and asking for forgiveness. See how this thing is done. Okay? O kasa vandami bante. You see the translation? With your consent, Venerable Sir, I worship you. Yeah? It is initiative. It is not that the senior say, please come and worship me, nor such thing. Yeah? It is initiative come from the junior. Why we say with this consent? Even the worship also, you should find a suitable time not to cause inconvenience. You find when there's a suitable time, you say, oh, Kasa, excuse me. Something like, excuse me, oh, Kasa. Yes? A bit like that. But in Pali kind of saying, excuse me, let me do this to you or with your consent. You know? Let me worship you. Vandami Bhante. Then the senior must reciprocate by wishing the junior well. Sukhi hotu. Nibbana pachaya hotu. Because this honoring the elders. So honoring the elders is actually meritorious. So for the elders, your wish, may this be a condition for your realization of Nibbana. Sukhi hotu is for one person, sukhi hontu if there are many people. And then the junior will take initiative to share merits with the senior. Whatever merit has been made by me, I share with Venerable Sir. So it requires the junior to take initiative. It is always like that. Then the senior will say, rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, anumodami. Okay, surely I rejoice in it. Sadhu, sadhu. And then the junior will say, you don't expect the senior to share with you. You have to take initiative to request. Requesting the sharing of merit is just like requesting Dhamma. You see? You don't expect a sit down and expect people, the elders, to do that to you. You have to request. This is one of the factor the Buddha say for the arising enhancement of wisdom. Request for sila, request for dhamma. Samina katang punyang mayang data bang. The merit made by Venerable Sir, please should be shared with us. Please share with us your merit. Sadhu anumodita bang. Surely you should rejoice in it. Just look at the first two. It put the senior in a leading position and the junior always humble and take initiative to request. Then the junior will ask forgiveness first. Sadhu, sadhu means anumodami. I rejoice in your merit. Okasa dwara tayena katang sabang acayang kamatame bante. Venerable Sir, for any offences I have committed by way of the three doors, please forgive me. Please forgive me, Venerable Sir, for any offences I have committed by way of the three doors. Dwara tayena katang sabang acayang kamatame bante. So it's always the junior have to take initiative to ask forgiveness. Then the senior say, kamami kamitabang. I forgive you all, and you all please forgive me. This is also necessary. This is a humility on the part of the senior. This is a humility. Even though usually, even you are very confident, you don't make mistakes, but it is also necessary. Because this model came down since the Venerable Sariputta's time. When someone accused Venerable Sariputta, then Venerable Sariputta declared, make a lion roar, saying that, I will not behave like that. I'm just like the snake whose poisonous fangs have been pulled out. So it's impossible for me to attack people as you describe. So because of that, then the person feels very shameful. Then he asks forgiveness from Venerable Sariputta. Look at what Venerable Sariputta respond in the sutta. He say, yes, I forgive you, but you please forgive me also. What mistake can Arahants make? Right or not? But out of humility, he also do. Not for falsehood. Because sometimes even Arahants can unknowingly offend people. You never know. So out of that humility, and to make the person who asks forgiveness didn't feel so bad, so he also asked forgiveness. So both sides seem to balance, not so feeling bad. But in the traditional, in modern days, usually it happened between elders, but sometimes the teacher act differently. Sometimes teacher act differently. How? I have the experience sometimes when my student asks forgiveness from me. I say, yes, you also should forgive me. Then immediately I saw the pride in that student, thinking that, my teacher recognized and he's thinking he has a mistake, whatever. Sometimes it's out of courtesy and out of maybe give you the benefit of doubt. I might have offended you in some ways. But it is wrong for the student to think proud, oh, my student asked forgiveness from me, and talk about it. It happened. So when that happened, sometimes the teacher may think, these students, it is not suitable for me. After all, I regarded the person well, and it is then the teacher may just keep quiet. If you ask forgiveness, okay, I forgive you. That is also correct. That's also correct. So if that happened, the students might reflect. If the students are good, sometimes the teacher also say, oh, you should please forgive me also. But in Burma, I mean traditionally, teacher, they try not to do that because students, it is more likely for students to end up in pride, like that only. So whatever it is, it's not for the students to expect anything, to expect the teacher to reciprocate. But generally, we prefer to reciprocate. If you ask forgiveness, I also ask forgiveness from you. That's what we try to do. Then, of course, the junior has to say, Sadhu, Sadhu, Kamami, Bante. Then, Sukhi Hotu, Nibbana, Pachayo Hotu. So, you see, in this kind of, here you also have the Isa Singtai. Understand? The practice, the tradition requires the junior to do the good things to the senior first. Then the senior, out of compassion and love for you, and will regard you well. So the junior should not expect the senior to take initiative first. They have to take initiative to ask for Dhamma, to expect, to do that. That is the attitude. And in terms of asking forgiveness, again, it's a junior that should take initiative to ask forgiveness. If both are equally wrong, junior and senior equally wrong, equally make mistake. If they don't come together, each other, usually the Sangha will consider the junior at fault. In the sense that if both are wrong, then the junior should take an initiative to mend it. But nowadays, we don't care lah. Sometimes I see the junior, if they don't know how to act, sometimes we try to act by example. So we take initiative. But the problem is, there are some juniors who will take advantage of that. Or sometimes they even talk about it. Oh, my elders do this to me first, ask me forgiveness first. These are no good. Then they are undeserving. They are not deserving our initiative. So that's to say, sometimes these things happen. But whatever it is, if we keep up this kind of good culture, good tradition, can the Sangha be in a very bad shape? No. They naturally will live well with each other. So for your lay people, same. The Sangha's model, lay people should also emulate. So when someone asks forgiveness from you, you should also say, oh yes, I forgive you. Please forgive me also. Whether you are aware of your mistake or not. Because why? We always assume a kind of mistake which is unintentional, which we ourselves do not notice. So that's good to be humble, even though you don't see mistake in you. Not to say you are uttering falsehood. No, not like that. Because there's kind of mistake that unknowingly we offend people without ourselves knowing it. Okay, this much. So tonight, for tonight, let's share, make aspirations. May these merits be a condition for my overcoming of all the pains, all the defilements, all causes of suffering. And then may they become our condition, supporting condition. It's not the condition. Nibbana is unconditioned. We can only say supporting condition for the realization of Nibbana, and we share our merits with all beings. Please recite after me. Yidang me punyang asawakaya wahang hotu. Yidang me punyang Nibbanasa pachayo hotu. Mama punya bhagang sabba satanam bhajemi te sabbe me samam punya bhagam labantu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.